This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Audie Cornish. It's been a great year for movie box offices, with many records toppled. The comic book blockbuster The Avengers had the biggest opening weekend in Hollywood history. Skyfall became the first James Bond film to earn more than $1 billion in ticket sales worldwide. In fact, box office sales overall this year are easily the movie industry's biggest ever. But what about quality? Bob Mondello says the news there is good, too. His top 10 list positively runneth over.
Hollywood's often accused of serving up simple-minded pleasures, either explosions or uplift, frequently both. But a lot of this year's best films were nuanced and complex, and for once their nuanced complexity was exactly what made them popular. Steven Spielberg's Lincoln, for instance.
I admire your zeal, Mr. Stevens, and I have tried to profit from the example of it.
No wide-eyed presidential snow job, Lincoln is a tale of political intrigue where the great good of eradicating slavery requires great compromise on lesser evils.
Ashley insists you're ensuring approval by dispensing patronage to otherwise undeserving Democrats.
Well, I can't ensure a single damn thing if you scare the whole house silly with talk of land appropriations, revolutionary tribunals.
Spielberg's Lincoln has other virtues, terrific performances, gorgeous cinematography, but what's captivating audiences is that it's not the dipped-in-amber civics lesson they were expecting. That's also true of the War on Terrorism chronicle, Zero Dark Thirty.
I don't care about bin Laden. I care about the next attack. You're going to start working on the American Al-Qaeda cells. Protect the homeland.
Bin Laden is the one who keeps telling them to attack the homeland.
Zero Dark Thirty is about as far from a rah-rah get-the-bad-guy flick as director Catherine Bigelow could make it, which is a good thing because Ben Affleck made a rah-rah get-away-from-the-bad-guys flick that would be pretty hard to top. The rousing thriller Argo, about how the CIA got six Americans out of Tehran during the Iran hostage crisis by pretending to make a movie.
You got six people hiding out in a town of what? 4 million people, all of whom chant death to America all the live long day. You want to set up a movie in a week. You want to lie to Hollywood, a town where everybody lies for a living. Then you're going to sneak 007 over here into a country that wants CIA blood on their breakfast cereal, and you're going to walk the Brady Bunch out of the most watched city in the world.
That's about 100 militia at the airport. That's right.
We did suicide missions in the Army that had better odds than this.
That's a trio of fact-based stories. Next, a fable blending real-world tempests and mythical creatures. Beasts of the Southern Wild tells the tale of a 6-year-old girl named Hush Puppy living in a bayou community that's hit by a hurricane.
Feed up time! Feed up!
Hush Puppy's world is at once real and magical, and so is Beasts of the Southern Wild. That's four of the year's 10 most interesting pictures. The next three hail from overseas, from France in the case of Michael Haneke's devastating masterwork, Amour, about an elderly married couple who find themselves facing the end of life, and not a pretty end, though they can still find joy for a while in things like a brand new motorized wheelchair. Amour is about a love that's lasted decades. Another French picture, Rust and Bone, is about a love just beginning between a fighter and a woman who suffers a life-altering accident, one that required some of the year's most arresting special effects. 2012's most compelling documentary, meanwhile, hails from Israel, The Gatekeepers, in which six former heads of that country's internal security service talk about everything from targeted assassinations to being hung out to dry by the politicians who gave them their marching orders. Gatekeepers offers an intimate and alternately fascinating and deeply upsetting perspective on conflict in the Middle East. Also eye-opening is the far lighter documentary Searching for Sugar Man about an American folk singer named Rodriguez. He never got much traction in this country, but he became a superstar in a place you might not expect.
And you think I'm curious.
The album was exceptionally popular. To many of us South Africans, he was the soundtrack to our lives.
The thing is, Rodriguez never knew he'd become a hit in South Africa, and his fans there all thought he was dead until someone went searching for Sugar Man. That's eight of my top 10. The last two are by directors named Anderson. Moonrise Kingdom is Wes Anderson's whimsical look at a 12-year-old who excels at scouting and the girl he runs off camping with.
Sometimes it's like leaves on my hair. Helps cool your head down.
That's
That's a good idea. It might also help if you didn't wear a fur hat.
Wes Anderson's whimsy contrasts with the high seriousness that Paul Thomas Anderson brings to his mid-century epic, The Master, about a movement called The Cause and its charismatic leader.
Even the smartest of our current scientists can be fooled.
Good science, by definition, allows for more than one opinion.
Which is why our gathering of data is so far-reaching.
Otherwise, you merely have the will of one man, which is the basis of cult. Is it not?
The Master is both intense psychologically and ravishing visually. Okay, theoretically we're done, but the number 10 feels especially arbitrary in a terrific year like this one, and I still have some time left, so let's keep going. Commercial filmmakers came up with some seriously cool fantasies this year, including two co-starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt, the time travel thrill ride Looper, in which Gordon-Levitt is an assassin who must kill his future self, played by Bruce Willis.
I can't let you walk away from this diner alive. This is my life now. I earned it. You had yours already.
And the final episode in Christopher Nolan's Batman trilogy, The Dark Knight Rises.
Protection from the blast. We're going to be all right. Double time, go.
It's an atom bomb.
You think they need to hear that right now? Why don't you let them die without hope? Come on.
He's protecting school kids in that scene, as were characters in two especially resonant foreign films. Monsieur Lazare, about how a sensitive substitute teacher deals with traumatized students at a Canadian primary school, and The Kid with a Bike, about an abandoned Belgian child and the woman who tames his violent impulses. Impulse Control also figures in two compelling love stories, Keep the Lights On, about a gay love affair undone by drug use, and Silver Linings Playbook, a happier tale about two damaged but upbeat souls who are heavily medicated.
You ever take Klonopin?
Klonopin, yeah.
Right? What?
Yeah.
What day is it?
Another romance, steeped in jazz, was the year's loveliest animated film, Chico and Rita, a conventionally drawn, unconventionally adult tale of Cuban musicians. And Tim Burton's stop-motion Frankenweenie was also pretty splendid, the story of a boy who reanimates his dog after an accident.
Oh, know what? Your dog is alive!
That's obviously a riff on Frankenstein, which is not the only classic novel to triumph in an unorthodox reworking this year. Tolstoy's Anna Karenina got vividly reimagined as if it were taking place literally on a stage.
I'm not used to being spoken to like that by a man I met once at a railway station.
I dare say, but if I'm not to dance with you, then I'm getting out of this operetta and going home.
Just as Anna's leapt from page to stage, leaping from the stage to the screen is Victor Hugo's Les Misérables. Not for all tastes, perhaps, but catnip for a theater nut like me. And that, if I'm not mistaken, is a second 10. If pressed, I could probably even come up with a third. It's been that kind of year, rewarding enough to send film lovers into cineplexes in 2013, feeling downright optimistic. I'm Bob Mondello.